Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Impact Factor. I am your host, Katie Van Aken, and this episode is another special interview to me. I have known Jamie DiNizio for, I think we decided, going on 16 years, and in those 16 years, we played soccer together, we went to college together, and we both pursued our PhDs in very different fields, but we enjoyed it nonetheless. So I'm excited for you to hear all of her wisdom and all of the cool stuff that she's doing. So without further ado, here's Jamie DiNizio, PhD. Okay, where do we start? How long have we known each other?
Okay, we first met in the fall of 2007?
Seven. Yeah.
Yes, when I was a freshman in college at Haverford, you were a prospective
high schooler. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So what is that? 16 years?
Damn.
Good math.
It's crazy.
I mean, that's cool. I love that. That's great, you know?
Yeah.
And now we can talk about your journey.
Yeah, so before we had a same PhD journey, we had a soccer journey together, so.
It's true. I've interviewed many soccer players on this podcast. Ooh, for some reason, there's a weird soccer PhD overlap, so. mostly in my world, but. So when I met you, you were a freshman at Haverford. Were you at that point declared in a major?
No. I went to Haverford knowing I was interested in science, but I was one of those people who was like, I love to learn. I'm going to keep an open mind. And for a hot minute, spring freshman year, I was like, I'm going to be a religion major. Then that lasted like 2 seconds. So I was pre-med when I came, and I remained pre-med until fall of my junior year. And I guess that was after I had declared a chemistry major. Mm-hmm. So other than my, 2 minutes of considering religion, I was pretty set it was going to be either biology or chemistry.
Which always aligned well with the pre-med because of the requirements matching up. Yeah. Obviously, I know that Haverford has a kind of a thesis requirement. What was your undergraduate research experience like?
So when I decided to major in chemistry, some of the chemistry professors were surprised because my grades were like fine. Like, they were good, not great. And most of the people who chose chemistry over biology had great grades in chemistry. I'm not much of a natural test taker. And
that's where grades come from.
Yeah, exactly. And so I reached out to Karin Åkerfeld, my first mentor, to just be exposed to a lab before you can even choose to do something. I was like, well, let me just be in a lab. And she was the first person who really believed in me and thought that despite not being a good test taker, that I might have a natural aptitude for research. So I did a little, I cleaned glassware and I like weighed out reagents. My sophomore and junior year and started to do some really small scale experiments. And then, end of junior year started talking about potential projects. And I decided to pursue a new project she had in mind, which was investigating the use of peptides to form hydrogels, because she had a theory that this particular peptide from actually a protein in semen, could have antimicrobial properties. So that was, that came later, and that actually 5 years after my senior thesis, it got published. So yeah, way later, but the first part was just forming the hydrogels and synthesizing the peptides. And so that's what I did my research on.
5 years later, were they using the same process that you designed?
I think that they were using the generation two that I proposed in my future directions.
Nice.
Yeah. Because it formed the beta sheet structures, and there was an additional sequence that I thought that could enhance the rigidity of the hydrogels.
Yeah. Wow. Very cool. Mm-hmm. So that was your undergraduate thesis.
Yes.
Did you, I assume you enjoyed research at that point?
Yes. And although I wasn't necessarily like, I'm going to get a PhD, I'm going to be a scientist. I knew med school wasn't for me. As I learned more about the test-taking structure, the time commitment, the match system, and how you don't really have control of where you live, I just knew that that wasn't going to be a good lifestyle for me, and that I was going to find a way to pursue my interests in health, medicine, another way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but still wasn't. On paper, my path reads very linearly, and it was anything but. Basically, every 2 to 4 years would reassess. Mm. So it looks straight, but at the time, I mean, I at each point considered a myriad of things, like really anything I could consider.
Yeah, that's actually interesting because, you know, there's certainly people who know exactly what their path's going to be, and it looks straight, and it is straight, and yours looks straight, but you know, at all of those points you could have pivoted, and you know, who knows what. So it's how interesting what everyone's journey looks like is very different.
Yeah, I was a minor in art history, and I considered being an art conservator because of my interest in chemistry and art, and you know, my twin sister is an artist, so I looked into doing internships in that after I graduated. I applied to labs. I applied to nonprofits. My application process was also information gathering.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'll try this first.
Yeah. Just a sidebar. That's an exact example. That's a perfect example of like a career path that, is like perfect for some sort of combination of expertise and interest, but that you would never think about as like no chemistry program is going to be like, oh, by the way, you could do this with art, you know?
Yeah.
So my next podcast is going to be interviewing people who do that kind of stuff. And so love that it. People can like learn about it. Cause I think there's so many cool jobs like that, but like, you never know, you know, when you study chemistry in college, they're like, you can be a chemist. Cool.
Yeah. That's definitely true.
Okay, so you applied, and so where did you end up going after Haverford?
So I ended up in a biochemistry, biophysics lab at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. So Dr. Ben Black was my PI, and it was very intense. Like going from Haverford to there was a steep learning curve, and I was doing very technically difficult mass spec experiments. We had, you know, the barest mass spec experience at Haverford. So I had to learn very quickly.
It was a research assistantship. What is that?
Yeah. It was a lab technician or something. But a former Haverford grad, male soccer player, Brian Wexler, had worked there I think 2 years prior. And so I guess he had paved the way for Haverford people performing well. So I think that helped me get the job, to be honest.
Well, now I don't know if it now the pipeline is strong. There's so many people I talk to who start doing just a break in their studies to do research at Penn. Okay, so
Yeah,
what
so
did you
I
learn during
really
that? Go ahead.
so I well I wanted to have a job that I could learn, figure out if I wanted to pursue science. And I also wanted a job that wasn't too strenuous, that I could learn how to be an adult and live my life and enjoy my life. And I also used that time to learn about other jobs. So I tried to use my network as much as I could, and colleagues, former colleagues of my dad, friends, parents, friends' parents, anybody who had a job that I thought I might like. I just had an informational phone call or a coffee if they were in Philly. Sometimes it was 5 minutes, sometimes it was an hour. And very quickly it was like, okay, I do want to do science, but all these people, even though they say they don't use their PhD, they have one. All these people with jobs that sound interesting to me have a PhD. I'm like, do you think you need it to do your job? And a lot of them would say no. But I was like, darn. So I knew I probably wanted to end up in industry, but I started my PhD with an open mind. And
I
I
like that.
knew pretty firmly, though, that I did not want to go into academia.
Yeah, but you were open to that changing if it did. And typically it
I was
changes
open to
the
that.
reverse direction, but that's so interesting because I've also heard multiple times people say that while working with PhDs or talking with people who have their PhD, they get excited about the things that they're doing, and that's sort of what answers the question of should I go get a PhD? And similarly, like, do you need one to do the work? Probably not, but
Oh no, everyone in the lab was like, don't do
yeah,
they were like, don't
because
do
they were
it.
all
And
in it, right?
they were like, don't do it. I was like, I think I have to do it. So my
Yeah.
situation was a little unique. Ben Black knew that I was thinking of applying. I took the GRE. I missed the cycle, and I was like, oh, I guess I'm gonna stay for a third year, or I'm gonna, I don't know, go do something else while I apply.
Yeah.
But a spot opened up at Penn, and there's no way to say this in a non-obnoxious way.
Yeah.
I did a really good job in my job.
Well, you
So
were a known quantity, right?
yes.
Like you worked in the department. Like they know who you are.
Yeah, spot opened up and they said, you want it? And I was like, yeah, cool. And I don't have to do the interview rounds, and I can have a spot at this Ivy League institution for my PhD. Like, okay,
Didn't
sure.
you like have to decide in like 2 days too?
Yeah, I had to decide in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And my wrapping up my job actually bled into starting my PhD. So for like 2 months, I was kind of doing double duty
That's
of
tough.
submitting a first author paper and starting a PhD.
Was it the same department but different lab? Am I remembering that right?
So same department. So Ben Black was it does epigenetics research. I actually haven't totally kept tabs, but at the time was really focused on the kind of unique proteins that identify the chromatin at the centromere, and was doing
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Those are big words.
quite. So when DNA compacts and forms chromosomes. There is a nucleating point that
That's
directs
called the centromere.
That directs splitting. So, you know, when DNA replicates in order for cells to split. I'm going to be really embarrassed if I'm getting this wrong. I haven't thought about any of this in a really long time. But
it's like
and so there are proteins that are unique to that I can't even remember. The DNA wraps around proteins as it compacts, and there are unique proteins, SEMPE, in the centromere. So I was doing biophysical characterization, and that's kind of part of the field of epigenetics. So basically, things that affect your genome that is not the AGTC DNA code.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so I knew I was interested in epigenetics. I wanted to pursue that. As an identical twin, once I found out about it, I thought that was fascinating. You know, because my sister and I have the same genome, but have a lot of differences. So I wanted to understand that. But yes, same department, different lab for my PhD.
Very cool. What was it? Was it like? Was your program one of the programs where you basically get accepted into a lab, or do you do rotations?
Did rotations. I also, struggling in my PhD, I loved my department. I loved so many of the PIs. That's not what I struggled with. It was collaborative. It was supportive. It was well funded. It was an amazing experience. I did rotations, and I really wanted to join Rahul Kohli's lab for the science that I could do, but also I thought that he and I would be a good fit, and I liked the people in the lab. But he didn't really have space. There were a bunch of MD PhDs that he had already accepted, and I basically kind of bullied my way in. I was like, I'm great. You should take me.
And I'm not going to get my MD at the same time, so you should take me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I took a risk. I had two other great options, but that's what I really wanted, and it worked out, so it was nice.
And it was also epigenetics.
So the reason I really wanted to join his lab, because he's an MD PhD, and I was still really looking for a way, despite being a biochemist and loving mechanism, I really wanted to find a way for my science to be related to human health and medicine.
Cool.
And it's really hard to find in basic biochemical research. And my project was related to epigenetics, but didn't really touch public health more broadly. But the other side of the lab did antibiotic resistance research. So even though I wasn't working in that, I got to be a part of those lab meetings, and was exposed to the medical system because there were so many MD PhDs, and I kind of learned a lot outside of my exact area of study because I was in that lab.
That's cool. I had a similar experience because my lab focused on energy storage, but there was a whole other half of our lab that did drug delivery systems, using the same nanomaterials, but for a whole different application. And I always enjoyed those conversations because I knew nothing about it, but I was like, wow, you're using the same carbon that I'm using, but you're doing something else with it. It's very cool.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. I have this weird vague memory that you were also doing like a minor or something.
Yeah.
In health something something.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it was a certificate. Throughout my entire PhD, I was involved with a public health program for PhDs. So it was associated with, so my PhD was at the med school in the biochemistry, biophysics department at the med school, part of Penn. So it was other PhDs in cell biology, cancer biology, genetics, and stuff like that from the med school who had a public health interest. And so there were seminars. We had to take public health courses with the public health masters and PhD students. And then we had to do a kind of capstone project to get this certificate. Mm-hmm. And I did something totally unrelated to epigenetics, but I literally forgot about this until right now. I wrote a paper about the pathogenic threat of tough mudder races and mountain biking. So I worked with this guy. The reason I chose this project was because the guy that I worked with, David Hewitt, is an ecologist. He is the coolest guy I've ever met. And now I'm going to go reach out to him. Maybe I'll send this podcast to him. Hey, David. I haven't talked to him in ages, but he is just one of those fascinating people who gets involved in all this different stuff. And this was one of his areas of study was, you know, antibiotic resistance and the pathogenicity of certain public bodies of water and mud. And as a sports person, I focused on, tough mudders and mountain bike races.
Wow. So, but that's not his focus. That's just where you took it.
It's part of his focus. Okay. He, I think he works for the government now in DC. But he was a like ad hoc lecturer at adjunct lecturer at Penn. I can't even remember how he got connected.
Well, I would love to talk to him. That would be a cool interview too. So
yeah, he's the coolest guy. Great energy.
Yeah. So that was your, so you were like, let's just write a paper on something really random that's nothing to do with what I'm doing on the day to day.
Yeah. But I'll, yeah. And I mean, I, through being in my lab, I had learned more and had become more interested in kind of infectious diseases. And I kind of explored that interest. A couple other things I did at Penn, which in post-COVID is wild. Something else I did, well, I'm sure you have questions, but I know that one of your questions is about other things I did at Penn.
Yeah, great.
So basically, because I knew I didn't want to go into academia, but I didn't quite know exactly what I wanted to do, I was like, let me explore all the things so that one, to build up my resume, but also because I wanted to figure out what I wanted to do. Like, I didn't see a good way to do that other than try things. So,
and a university is a wealth of knowledge for those things, you know, like you're in a good place to be doing that.
And I mean, I'd like to formally acknowledge the immense privilege that I had, both in the way that I was accepted into the program and the opportunities that were afforded to me being at an R01 institution and, you know, such a big school like Penn. You know, it's tough for people to have access to that stuff in other programs. And I am like really grateful. And I definitely was not going to let that pass me by. I did all the things.
Like.
So one of the other things I did was I, in 2015, 2016, the Trump era, I got very involved in science policy. That was kind of the first time that I had seen science as threatened, and that kind of evoked something in me, and I wanted to pursue whether or not a job in policy is something that I would enjoy. So a kind of older student in my department had started the Penn Science Policy Group, and it had grown, and there were people from other departments and other schools as well. So the biology, chemistry programs, that kind of Penn proper as well. And so through that group, I was involved in a number of different projects and activism things. But one of the coolest things I did was help them plan a public forum about what Philadelphia would do if there was ever a pandemic.
No way.
I swear. So this was kind of Zika and Ebola, and like we're talking about those things, and examining how Philly responded in those and talking about it on a grander scale. But we had people from the public health department, from city council, scientists, and we held both a closed door and a public forum. And then we went down to DC and met with other groups from around the country who had held similar forums and kind of created this big document, like, are our cities prepared to respond?
Wow.
Now, like, when the outbreak happened, I was like, well, at least I knew Philly was pretty ready. And guess what? Philly did pretty good.
Yeah.
They did pretty good. Their information management system and their communication tools.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what we came out of it. It was like, hey, Philly's doing okay.
Wow, that's crazy. But there were cities and locations that were not as prepared based on what you learned.
And a lot of it was kind of less technological infrastructure. Data management stuff was the big missing link. Yeah. So, you know, through that work, like art conservatorship, though, those jobs are far and few between. And
yeah,
ultimately decided that that was something that I would stay involved in. And that might be something that, you know, I get more involved in later in my career, or, you know, if I find a particular avenue, I make a jump or something. But I didn't want to do that start.
Yeah. That's good.
And then the last thing I did was I was like, all right, I need to really ask myself if I want to do industry. So I got involved with the Penn Biotech Healthcare Consulting Group. So
sure.
It's science, it's PhDs and MBA students who got linked up with companies or startups who were looking for free consulting, basically. And you did like we did a mini consulting project.
Huh.
And I thrived. I was not in charge and I just took charge and I was like, this is for me. I love this.
Wow. What a great experience. Because like, when else would you ever learn that you like that kind of stuff, you know?
And I mean, I knew I didn't want to be a consultant, but the aspects of the work, you know, the strategy of science and decision making is kind of what I'm doing now. And that's what I enjoyed.
Yeah. Well, that's a great segue. So what are you doing now, Jamie?
So now I work for when I joined, was a small 10-person startup. We actually were in stealth mode when I first joined or signed my contract. Mm. And it was a gene editing company with the ultimate goal of curing cardiovascular disease. So that's kind of our big banner headline. And we are now 250 people.
Holy shit.
So, we have a big, big, shiny new office in Fenway. And, the company is Verve Therapeutics. I am on the editing team, specifically work in development. And co-lead a team developing, well, initially I was involved in developing sequencing, primarily sequencing-based assays in order to assess whether our gene editing therapeutic is causing off-target editing or structural damage. I
Like
can
side effects.
like yeah, so involved in safety. So I was initially kind of involved in the development of those assays and now involved in leading the team, collecting the data for our main drug candidates. I can talk more about what our drug product actually is if I realize I'm being kind of vague.
No, it's fine. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes high level is better. I mean, what's cool though is it sounds like you're doing the science, but you also have this, connection to the patient, which is this disease that you're, trying to cure, which is sort of what you said was your
Yeah.
sweet spot early on, right?
Yeah. So when it's actually kind of funny the way things work out. When I was interviewing, the day that I interviewed Penn for that first job, Ben Black's lab, my dad had a heart attack. I was a senior in college.
Whoa.
And he survived. He's thriving. Dad.
Yeah. If you're listening, Mr. Denzio.
but yeah, that was a very, traumatic, significant moment in my life. And so I just can't believe like feel passionately about disease we're curing and also the gene editing therapy is related to my PhD work. So like in a really high level way. So our first two programs are using well, it's CRISPR-Cas based, but using a base editing protein, so making a single base change in the genome. So going from an A to a adenine to a guanine.
Gotcha.
But my PhD, I worked on base modifying enzymes. So that knowledge has directly translated to kind of the work that I do now.
Wow. Do you spend a lot of time like on the at the bench?
I
Is that what the
haven't
kids say?
done an experiment since September 2021. I'm a manager
Wow.
now.
Just in meetings all day.
Yeah, in meetings and looking at data with my team and
Yeah. It's cool. Do you like that though?
do. I really do. What's really fun about this field is that there isn't playbook, which is both stressful and things change constantly, but the field, the regulatory, the FDA and all of the other competing companies are trying to figure out the best way to assess these new therapies. There
Yeah.
is a new field of science, so there's a lot of strategy that goes into not just the execution, but also how we craft a package and the narrative around our drug products.
Wow. That's very cool. And it's just the same, as like, I work in software, so like machine learning and stuff for medical purposes, that's all like still being figured out. How do you even handle that,
I
So.
use ChatGPT every day at work.
Do
And
you?
this is an aside. How much
Okay.
easier would our PhDs have been if we had ChatGPT?
Oh my God, tell me about it.
Like, I'm not like, it's not doing my job, but the number of times I ask a basic science question that usually I'd have to like read four different links and four different papers to like pull an answer together in my brain just gives me. It does that for me.
Yeah, good old chat. He'll put it together for you.
Obsessed.
I'm planning to do an episode, spoilers for the listeners, about how ChatGPT is gonna affect research and PhD. So maybe I'll have you on as a guest.
Amazing. I want to say something about my PhD because
Okay.
I'm realizing that it sounds like I just had this fabulous time. I did, but I didn't. I mean, you were there.
Yeah.
I was like pretty
I didn't
miserable.
see you for weeks sometimes 'cause you were, yeah. Well, okay,
It
so one
wasn't
of my
even that I was
questions,
working. Like I
yeah,
struggled with my
sad,
mental health.
sad.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It was very isolating for me, and I really had to dig and push myself to do these other things to stave off that isolation, because I'm a team person. That's why I love where I am now. It's why I loved playing soccer. Like, I really struggled with how lonely it can be, because the only person who cares about what you're doing really is you.
And nobody else cares if you defend this year or 5 years from now, you know? So it's tough.
I mean, your PI hopefully cares, but still,
They're also super
sometimes not
busy and
really.
they, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I'd rather you stick around, you know? Yeah. It's definitely tough. I think the individual journey, the individualness of the journey is both the coolest thing and also the most challenging thing about the PhD process, because you really become, you learn so many different skills because you're on your own, you know, but you also struggle because you're on your own. So,
I think you did a good job at that too. You got involved in a lot of different stuff.
oh yeah, sometimes I think back, well, in my 5th year when I was like wrapping up, I look back on my 4th year and I was like, I don't think I did any like real things during that year. Like what I was like running, organizing events and like part of the student council and like what even happened? Going to conferences. I do love a good conference though.
Oh,
That's like my
me
favorite
too.
thing.
And we could have
Yeah.
done more science, but honestly, all those experiments probably would have failed anyway. So, you know what? We did enough.
You know, we did enough. That's the key. All right, well, is there anything else you wanted to touch on? Otherwise, I'll jump to my like wrap-up questions.
I guess. No, I mean, what are your listeners looking for? You know, is this these people, do you know what
Yeah,
your
I mean,
demographic is?
it's
Are they
interesting.
looking for advice or
I think a lot of it
stories?
is like solidarity in the sense that like those of us who have been through it also felt lonely and struggled with that. But like for example, you know, looking back on it, what advice would you give to yourself in that first year?
Well, I wouldn't have cared about, I should have cared about my classes less.
Yep.
Like,
But that's hard to do, right?
yeah, and I did learn, like, they were foundational. Like, they were. Because
Yeah.
I don't know, I needed more biology to be in that program and where I am now. So, but like, grades didn't matter.
You don't need to ace it, you know?
Oh, yeah, just get a pass. And then I guess I would have just wanted to reassure myself, trust myself. Think even though I haven't ever done long-term planning, because seriously, each step of the way, I'm like, I could be a florist.
Yeah.
See, I have subconsciously listened to my gut, and I just would urge myself to, I mean, I did need to do it, and I did it, and I hated it most of the time. I survived, and now I have a job I love. So
There you go.
yeah,
Yeah, I
I did
think
a bunch of fun stuff too.
yeah.
Keep doing the fun stuff, because like, even if you bail. And you're like, I can't. Like, you got to keep living your life.
Yeah, it's hard to not let it consume your life, but that's a big piece of surviving is keeping that from happening. Also, what you said about trusting your gut, that's an interesting, and I really like that as advice because, many of us have made it this far from doing exactly that, right? And so at that's the critical point at which you should absolutely be trusting your gut. All right, well, let's end with a nice question of what is a good memory or story you have from your time there? Conference trip, night in the lab. Yikes.
I made two or I made two really well, I had lovely people in my lab,
Yeah.
good friends. I made two lifelong friends who of which is here in Boston, and I see who I have many happy memories with. Drinking, concerts, just, we doing experiments together, but also living our lives together. I was at both of their weddings, threw one of them a bachelorette party, hoping to meet the other one's baby soon.
Wow.
Okay, so a happy memory with one of those people, my friend Monica. We went to a conference in California together with our PI, and we blew off the afternoon of talks because it was the first day of March Madness and St. Patrick's Day, and we did a basketball craft beer pub crawl
Oh my God.
in like Ventura, California. And it was
And that's what you
delightful.
remember, not the afternoon of talks or the
No,
morning
I
of
went to
talks.
some sick conferences,
Yeah.
and only one of them was actually pretty relevant. I chose based on location.
Well,
And you
that's
know
advice
what?
right there.
Do you know why that was okay? Because I knew I wasn't going into academia. If you know
True.
you're not going into academia, doesn't really matter if you're networking at conferences.
True.
Doesn't. Went to the
And
Bahamas, Germany, California.
you're still giving talks or posters, right? So you're still practicing that skill set, which is important for whatever you're going to do. You just happen to be doing it in the Bahamas.
That was awesome. One was like, I gave a talk at that one.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Very cool.
I have one last thing I want to say to your listeners.
Please.
Negotiate your first offer. Not enough, especially the ladies out there. Not enough women that I work with that started at our company, who started from a postdoc or straight out of their PhD. I am the only one that I've talked to. I'm sure some of them did, but I'm the only one that I've talked to who negotiated their starting offer.
Yeah.
Makes a difference.
It does. And as someone coming out of a PhD, we don't really have a sense for what we should be paid. So that's hard. But it's certainly worth having the conversation because what's the worst that could happen? They say no.
But they expect, at this point, they expect you to negotiate, so.
Good advice.
Thanks.
Anything you want to plug about your company?
Well, we had a birthday
You
party
hiring?
today. We're not
Okay.
hiring. We had a birthday party today because we celebrated our 5-year anniversary and
Wow.
had little party hats and little kazoos, and there was a slideshow and cake.
Best day ever.
What do I want to plug about our company? It's going to be a big year. I think I believe in what we're doing, and
Great.
I'm
That's
hoping
all
for
that
good
matters.
things.
Very cool. Well, Jamie, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Your wisdom is unmatched.
Stop. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show and spending some time with us, with me and the listeners, and I'm sure they will enjoy it.
This is great. Thank you. I can't wait to go listen to every other episode you've recorded.
Thanks to Jamie for coming on the show. If you or someone you know wants to be interviewed on Impact Factor, feel free to reach out via Instagram and follow us for updates at Impact Factor Pod. Thank you all for listening and have a great week.